All right. We are back. Phone lines are open, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. We'll take calls here for another segment. A lot of you guys want to weigh in. Do they have a shot tonight? And if so, how? I think they definitely have a shot tonight. Why not? I mean, the league is a coin flip for basically 30 teams in it. I mean, Kansas City you may take out, but they needed, you know, a lucky no flag on an interference late in that game to get out of Atlanta with a win. Anything can happen. Cincinnati is desperate. I get it. Desperate is dangerous in the NFL, and they've got more talent. They've got an established quarterback. They have much better receivers. They have a much better pass rusher than anybody that rushes the passer for Washington, and they need it. They need it badly, and 0-3 is not a death knell, but it's close to it, or it has been. But as I said earlier, tough to really know now with a 17-game schedule, expanded playoff field. It's going to start happening more and more, but Cincinnati does not want to go 0-3 with home losses to the Patriots and Washington. That would not be a good sign. But you know what? The opponent tonight doesn't really care about their plight. And they're trying to make it two in a row after feeling pretty good about themselves last week. They have the ability offensively to move the football. We've seen that in the first two games. It's happened in several different ways. If it happens tonight the way it happened last week, which is 200-plus yards on the ground, 18-plus more snaps offensively than the opponent, they're right there. At the very least, they're right there at the end with a chance. 301-230-0980. Our predictions on the game come a little bit later on in the show. Jax has been on hold the longest. Let's go to Jax in Calvert County. Jax, go ahead.
Hey, thanks, Kev, for taking my call.
Sure.
What's going on? I don't believe they're going to win because the one thing I hear every week when we play, they always say something is happening for the first time against us. Somebody gets 20 catches or something like that, something crazy like that. But if they win the game, they got to do all the things you and Dennis was been talking about earlier. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Yeah, I don't know if it's it's quite what you described, but yes, it does seem like over the years something happens in games against Washington that haven't happened in a while. Let's go to Ian. Ian, go ahead.
Of course, I give them a chance in a week-to-week league, but no, I would not bet anything on it. I would not predict it. I don't think they're going to win, and here's simply why. Ja'Marr Chase has been kind of held pretty tight the first 2 weeks, played pretty elite corners. Washington doesn't have elite corners or elite secondary.
Yep.
Higgins is coming back. That frees up some more room for him. So I think it'll be a big, big, big passing day for Burrow, Chase, Higgins, and that group. And then just one more point on Daniels. I want to see some urgency from him from the get-go. I think he dictates so much of this team.
You're trying to change
we talked
his
about that nonchalance.
What are you doing? He's competitive as hell.
I'm telling
it just doesn't.
You, there's enough.
He's
out
not
there.
Mr. Rah-Rah, Mr. Angry, Mr. You know, fire everybody up.
I don't need.
He's California.
I don't need Mr.
Cool.
Rah-Rah or Mr. Angry. I need someone with. Hey, it's more than it's cool. I got this. I'm so laid back. I'm going to run around.
Do you know how many turnovers he has in the first two games?
Say what?
Do you know how many turnovers he has in the first two games?
I'm aware. Do you know how many hits he has in the first two games?
Like, yeah, which makes not turning the ball over even more impressive. I mean, there's an urgency to protect the football. He understands that, at least through two games.
I mean,
I hope it continues. It may not.
He even have? Yeah, I mean, Kevin, you can point to that stat, but I can point to other stats. I mean, he's not passing the ball that much, so his turnover potential hasn't been that high. He's throwing the ball behind the line of scrimmage half the time.
Yeah, all of those things are true. But the bottom line is he's a rookie quarterback, and through two games, I think if it happens tonight, he will become the first rookie quarterback If he ends up, I think, with thanks for the call, by the way. If he ends up with I think if he doesn't turn the ball over tonight, it'll be the first time a rookie quarterback in his first three starts did not have a turnover. Didn't I see that stat, Denton? Also, I think if he completes, is it 70% of his passes again tonight? That'll be the first time it's happened. Sure, a lot of those completions are easy pitch and catch, screens, bubbles, etc. They also took a couple of shots downfield when it mattered with the game on the line last week. Let's go to Kevin. Kevin, go ahead.
Thanks for taking the call, Kevin. I know this is a low bar, but I just want them to be competitive. I want them to show progress. This is a national game, and people are going to be watching it around the country. I don't want to be embarrassed like we were at the end of last year where they put up 40-plus points. If we can keep them in the 20s and be within 7 or 10 points by the end of the game and show some competitiveness, I'll be satisfied. And I know we want to win. I know that's important. But you want to show progress, and you want people to say, okay, they're making progress here. The secondary just wasn't giving up everything. We made them earn it. I'd be satisfied with that moving forward, something we can hang our hat on.
Yeah, that's fine. You're entitled to it. I want them to win tonight. I want, you know, I'm with you on when we get to the end of 17, you know, kind of evaluating the progress and evaluating the big things, Jaden, the coaching staff, the player acquisition, et cetera. But right now, yeah. And look, one of the things, like if you told me other than Jaden, you know, making progress, forget the score, hard for me to do, all right? But what else would you like to see? I'd actually love to see just a much more urgent, smarter defensive effort tonight that doesn't get shredded in the run game and then provide some pressure to the passer on the other team. Because I will admit this about a season that can go a lot of different directions because they're in the NFL and all NFL teams basically have chances here. If we see a third straight week of defensive issues, coverage, no pass rush, getting run on by a team that hasn't run on anybody. Like if I come in here tomorrow morning and let's just say it's a 34-17 Bengals win and they rush for a 150 with Zach Moss and Chase Brown, I'm not going to be shocked, but I'm going to be disappointed that they didn't address that, they didn't try to fix it, or maybe it would be a sign they can't fix it. And that would be problematic because you've got some running teams like Cleveland and Baltimore coming up in the next few weeks. You've got a Pittsburgh team down the road. You got Philly twice. You've got Dallas, you know. What would really concern me about just having a competitive season and having a season where games matter as we get further into the season is if they come out on the short end of the run stopping side tonight. If they can't stop the run tonight against Cincinnati, problem. I also expect them to run the football. Washington's offensive line could be the story of the game tonight. It was the story of the game in many ways on Sunday against the Giants in the run game. It could be the story of the game tonight. You're playing a depleted Cincinnati front. Let's go to Jerome. Jerome, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you for my call, man. I love your show. Been listening forever, man.
Thanks, Jerome.
I'm gonna tell you. People probably gonna disagree. I think we can win, depending on the coach's scheme and if they have enough intestinal fortitude to run the right scheme. If we come in this game and we set it up, you know, we don't have good cornerbacks. We set up a three safety setup, two linebackers, and set up a four man front. And I think if we run that, and if we run it where we're not doing man-to-man, I think we can deal with them. We run downhill, and we cover them over the top, I think we can handle both their wide receivers if we set up our scheme right three spaces. Offensively, I think if we come out, go straight at them in a way that they don't expect misdirection when you outmanned, you come into that setup with not running. We know we can run the ball. We come into the game. And we got two running backs that can catch. We put both of them in the game. negate their linebackers, run both of our running backs into pass patterns. We put our taller wide receivers because Jaden Daniels used to throw on tall guys. That's why him and Terry and I connected. And I looked at all his old receivers. His old receivers are 6'1" and up all through college.
They are.
The guys that were, Terry used to catching 50-50 passes, and Jaden used to throw into open receivers or tall receivers.
Well, part of that is college, and part of that is LSU, and part of that are guys like Ayuk and Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr.
But
and exceptional route
Ayuk
runners.
Was fast enough
it's
to
different
be,
in the
Ayuk
NFL.
Ayuk was fast enough to get open. Exactly. Yeah. But he's going to need to be given the opportunity to have to stop them from just pinning their ears and rushing. So we take our running backs, run them out. We have five. That gives us five receivers. That throws them off in the beginning, backs them up so that we can actually start running, and they got to respect our pass game. Right now they will not respect our pass game. So it depends on our coaches if they are determined enough to not go in here and play this game that they're practicing for what we've done. We need to change the process. That's in any –
Thanks for the call, Jerome. Good call. I mean, I love your strategic ideas. By the way, that last point you made is something that always happens. Now, you know, the period of time that goes by before there's a self-scout, sometimes it's a few weeks. But the idea that, you know, your opponent is essentially game planning off what you did last week or the last 2 weeks, there's a lot of... There's a lot that you come into the game showing the opponent based on what you think they've scouted, but that's not where you're going with it. But on the first point you made defensively, so I am going to be interested to see who's out there defensively tonight. You're not going to have Cleland Farrell, so I would imagine that means more snaps for Jamin Davis. It'll definitely mean more snaps for Jean Baptiste, who they like. They like number 90, okay, if you didn't know what number he is. Putting three safeties on the field, will we see more of 35? We did last week. Will we see him with Chin and Martin? Whether it's St. Juice and Sandra still or St. Juice and Davis, I don't know. I mean, are we going to see Forrest tonight activated? That'll be interesting. The idea of, you know, three safeties, how about the idea of a five-man front so that guessing they may try to run the football as the Giants did and Tampa did? I don't know why they would do that. Their game plan, regardless of the fact that it's been one of the weaknesses here in the first 2 weeks, they've got Chase, they've got Higgins, they've got Gesicki, they got the guy that caught the two touchdowns against Kansas City, can't pronounce his last name. I would imagine they're just going to come out and they're going to target Washington's weakness, and they should. So how do you stop that? You either say, we can't, so we're going to bend. We're not giving up the big play. And when we get into the red zone, we've got some things that we think we can force field goals on. Or you got to get after Joe Burrow. You've got to pressure him. He does take sacks. He does. It's not because he's holding it. It's because they haven't had great O-line play necessarily. But somehow... I don't even think they can stop Cincinnati. Like, I'm not real confident they can stop Cincinnati. I am confident that they can keep Cincinnati off the field. Let's go to Mark in Tacoma Park. Mark, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin. Love your show. Appreciate it. I enjoyed the keys to victory that you have, but I have to admit, I think this is a milk game because I give this team a 2% chance of winning. I think the score that you mentioned earlier is a little closer to mine. I think it's going to be
2%'s got some sugar in it, Mark.
There's a shot. You know, we got a shot. That's the thing. But I honestly think it's going to be 47-17. I think it's going to remind us of the Mike Vick to Deshaun Jackson game.
Really?
And it's going to be ugly early. And the problem is I think your keys to victory are great, except, you know, like you said, we can't stop Cincinnati. And therefore, I think they're going to be playing from behind, and I think it's going to get ugly early, and it's going to be one of those things where, you know, by halftime, they're just going to be like, hey, let's just see what this kid can do, throw the ball, and it's going to be a dark game. I'm sorry. I mean, because Jamar Chase, I see for 200, Mike Gesicki, maybe 75 yards, and I just don't see it because our secondary is tough, and we don't put any pressure on the quarterback. So
all right.
don't know how we win this one.
47-17, another Monday night massacre. They've had some bad Monday night games. I mean, just thinking about some of the absolute beatdowns towards the end of the, I mean, we had the 2010 Monday night massacre. We know that one. But remember swinging gate against the Giants the year before, 45-12? I think that made back-to-back Monday night games, 45-12, 15, that would be 114 to, what did they score against the Eagles that night? Was it 35? Did they score 35 against the Eagles? It was 59.
I thought it was 59-28.
59-28. So 114 to 40 in back-to-back Monday night games. I don't think they had one because the Giants swinging gate game was the first game where Bruce Allen, he had been hired and Vinny had been fired. I think that was the very first game. Welcome to Washington, Bruce, or welcome back to Washington. Let's go to Paulie. Paulie, go ahead.
Big guy, hail to the W.
What's up? How you doing?
What you say, the guy from Cincinnati said our offense is basic?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Basic is good. Here we come, stop us. You know, so like you said, we gotta speed the game up by slowing it down. Their weakness is on their D-line. Our strength is our running backs. Run that ball.
Yep.
Play everything off the run. You know what I mean? As far as defense go, man, listen, we gotta get pressure up the middle on Burrow, quick pressure. Make him get the ball out of his hands quick. You know, let's bring Louisville. Let's bring whoever up, Wagner, you know. Let's make him make quick decisions. And here's the key to it all right here. The secondary got to tackle better. All right? So we made improvements from week one to week two. Let's make another improvement from week two to week three. And I think we got a good chance to win this game tomorrow. I ain't saying about sense of urgency. No. One thing I knew about Jaden Daniels in college, and I see right now, no moment is too big for him.
No.
You know, you can say what you want to say. This is still Monday Night Football, and all eyes is going to be on Jaden Daniels tonight, and he noticed. You know, this is Jaden Daniels' breakout party tonight, man. You know, call me a homer, call what you want to call, but I see us coming out of – I see us on our way to Arizona – with a victory, you know? And I'll take that off, man. Hail to the W.
All right, I'll talk to you later. I mean, there is one other Monday night game going on simultaneously. I get it. But Washington-Cincinnati, I think for NFL fans tonight, is bigger than Buffalo-Jacksonville because people want to get a look at Jaden Daniels, no doubt. And there isn't a moment too big for him. He's been in the biggest moments in football. Because really, the biggest stages in many ways are at the college level in our country for some reason. I love it. But there's no bigger stage than Death Valley Saturday night against Bama. And he's been through all this stuff. And there's a confidence to him. He's the least of my worries tonight. Of course he could have a rookie moment. But it's just as likely on a Sunday at 1 as it is on a Monday night at 8:15. Let's finish it up with Charles in Rockville. Charles, go ahead.
Thanks for having me. I think that they're keeping Jaden Daniels, they're holding him back. But I also like the way they're doing it. They just give him a vanilla offense to run, and they're adding things every week. So like the last caller said, I think this is a breakout game for him. We're going to see some more complex plays, and we're going to see a lot of downfield. And hopefully all this translates into a win for the Commanders. And that's just the point that I wanted to make.
Yeah, I mean, I think specific to him, and I talked a little bit about this, and thanks for the call. You want to see a couple of things. You want to see him not bail as quickly when there is a pocket. And you want to see him when he does bail, hopefully at the right times, you want to see him keep his eyes down the field. Because he's so elusive, he's so good at extending the play as a scrambler, you just are going to have opportunities down the field before you get back to the line of scrimmage to throw the football. And that's what he's probably been taught, or the teaching points have been highlighted by the missed opportunities in weeks one and two. Not that he didn't make good plays in some of those cases anyway. He moved the chains on the one in which he missed McCaffrey downfield with a 14-yard run when it was second and 13 or third and 13. But, yeah, that you want to see that continue to develop. He's got that in him. It's not like he only extended the plays to scramble. He did it a lot. You know, you go back to LSU, he did scramble to scramble a lot. He did extend the play and move outside the pocket to scramble a lot. Because it is, as, you know, the head coach would say on Tell the Truth Monday, it's a superpower. He likes to use that term, too. It's one of his superpowers. His number one superpower is if he is in the clear and there's daylight, it's pretty hard to catch him. It's pretty hard to hit him. But there are plays down the field once he threatens a defense out of the pocket with his legs, man. You got defenders going, do I come up? Do I stay with the receivers? Well, right now they might be coming up thinking he's not looking downfield. That's where big, big plays can happen. All right. When we return, we will go around yesterday's NFL card. I mean, it was one surprise after another and a couple of phenomenal performances. We'll get to that next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
The biggest plays and clutch moments.
Oh, look out!
It's time to go around the NFL.
Get into the eye here. Henry's sweet spot right up the gut. Derrick Henry! Running for the end zone. He's in. Touchdown, Baltimore.
They had to hold on for dear life at the end, but the Ravens were dominant, really, for three-plus quarters on the way to a 28-25 win over the Cowboys as we go around the NFL. Lamar Jackson, 12 of 15 for 182 yards. Rush for 87. And Derrick Henry had a 151 on the ground. Two touchdowns as well. Also had a catch for 23 yards. This was that game in which, you know, Dallas had a chance because Derrick Henry wanted to play for the Cowboys to sign Henry to a one-year, $8, $9 million deal, figure out a way to do it. If they had gotten Dak's deal done earlier, if they had gotten CeeDee Lamb's deal done earlier, they could have cleared the cap space for a Derrick Henry. Instead, they had to match up against him, and it was a mismatch. Dallas is small, weak, and soft on defense up front. There's no doubt about it. We saw it at times last year, specifically in the playoff game. We saw it last week. If they can put you in position where they just can pass rush, and they're fine, but 274 yards on the ground. That following New Orleans going for 190 yards on the ground last week. Let's not forget that in the playoff game last year against the Packers, you had Aaron Jones go for 5.5 yards per carry, 21 carries, 118 yards. The Cowboys defensively are a mess right now. Mike Zimmer, Dan Quinn at the end of the year, they're too small defensively. Meantime, Baltimore needed it. They got it. They go to 1-2. And in the process, I think they reminded us all, me anyway, just how tough they are. Derrick Henry, by the way, in the game now has 12 games with at least 150 yards and two rushing touchdowns. That's tied with just two other players. I'm sorry, tied with one other player and short of one other. LaDainian Tomlinson had 12 games of 150 and two touchdowns. Only Jim Brown with 13 has more. In that game, by the way, I don't know if you caught it, Dallas kicker Brandon Aubrey, 65-yard field goal in the first half. Like, we're trying 65-yard field goals in a 7-0 game in the first half. That's what this league has come to. That would have never been thought of unless it was the end of the half or the end of a game. It was in the first quarter they converted a 65-yarder. That puts him number two behind Justin Tucker at 66 yards. He passed Matt Prater, who had a 64-yarder and held the record for the second longest field goal in history. Dallas has some issues defensively. They definitely do. I also think they've got issues running the football. Big-time issues. The Cowboys fall to 1-2. They play the Thursday night game in the Meadowlands against the Giants before going to Pittsburgh to face a rather good defensive team. Then they've got a tough stretch of Lions, 49ers, Falcons, Eagles, Texans. So the Cowboys better do some damage here, you know, on Thursday night and not blow that game, because if they don't beat the Giants Thursday night, that's a terrible start with a real rough stretch ahead of them. It's early. It is early, but they are small and not great up front against the run defensively. Let's go to, by far and away, the most intense game, even if it wasn't well played, the intensity of Philly at New Orleans in the early window.
It is second down and 5. Do they keep it on the ground with Saquon Barkley? They do. He breaks free. He's at the 50, the 40, the 30. He's going to go. Touchdown, Saquon Barkley.
God, I love Merrill Reese on a call. He's just the best. So the Eagles, in a game in which, man, I can't imagine they're not still killing Nick Sirianni in Philadelphia for some of his decisions. But they get Saquon Barkley, who, Denton, he looks elite right now as a back. I mean, their one dropped pass on an easy pitch and catch at the end of the Monday night game from being 3-0. 17 for 147. Including the 65-yarder that gave them the lead. They win the game 15-12. Derek Carr, after in that New Orleans offense, which was just devastating in the first 2 weeks, that was the biggest shocker yesterday, is how good Philadelphia's defense was after they couldn't pressure Kirk and couldn't get off the field against him with the game on the line. The play of the game was the throw to Goddard, you know, where it's second and 12, I think, at that point. He takes it 61 yards and gets him down in range. But I said this even after Monday night, and I still believe it. Sirianni could get in the way of this because he's such a tool, and he's so just completely out of his mind on some decisions that even after the fact sometimes are dead wrong, and he still doubles down on it. Let me give you the one that, to me, was just so silly. At the end of the first half, the Eagles had one timeout left, and they had a 4th-and-1 at the New Orleans 15-yard line with 14 seconds left in the game. It's 3-0 in the game. They have already been in range in the red zone two different times. An interception into the end zone by Jalen. And no, it was one other time. And they had a fumble at midfield. Here they are on a long drive. Let me tell you why the analytics, if the analytics said to go for it, they're wrong. Because after you run that 4th-and-1 play at the 15, if you get it, there are now about 9 seconds left in the game, and you use your last timeout. You know what that's good for? One shot from, say, the 13-yard line into the end zone. What's the probability of scoring a touchdown on that one play? Is it worth it for the one shot into the end zone to take 3 potentially off the board? The answer is hell no. 4th-and-1, analytically, is a go-for-it green light 99 times out of 100. Probably not that. But in that situation, because of the clock and the timeout situation, but really the clock, like you're going to run, you're going to get one play before you then have to bring on your field goal team anyway. They got stopped. They didn't get any points. Did you see the reaction from the Philly fans in the Superdome? I mean, they wanted to go down and fire him if they had the power to do it right then and there on the spot. Really good football game. The Saints could do nothing. They literally needed a blocked punt. They needed, you know, they had a big play to Olave. God, he's good. We had a chance to draft him. But Barkley looks so good. What did you think of that game?
Well, how about the issues on the sideline with Jalen Carter? Did you see that?
I did, but can I just say something?
They
couldn't
beast.
Control him after the last stop, right? But
yeah.
He was dominant.
He was dominant.
Game.
I mean, he's such a great player, but he's kind of a head case. You know, sometimes I think that the Philadelphia coaching staff likes this because it gets this dude Dom on television. Has there been a game where he has not been shown on television this year?
I don't know. Until Dom got thrown out of that game last year, whatever game that was, I'll be honest with you. I kind of had heard of him. But he was that was more of a Philly phenomenon.
And they're like trying to make him a superstar.
Yeah.
It's really, really weird. But Jalen Carter is so good.
Oh, my God.
So good. Like, they're a scary team if they can get the offense moving correctly. Because, like, I don't know if you've seen the overall stats, but Jalen Hurts is turning the ball over a lot this year.
Yeah, he had a pick and a fumble in the game yesterday. You know, remember, they did not have A.J. Brown Monday night. They did not have A.J. Brown yesterday. The other player on defense, and I noticed him in that opener against Green Bay, number 53, Zach Bond, is really good. He's excellent. Jalen Carter is a dominant, dominant player. I think Philly's better. I think it's obvious that they're a better team. But, God, the Sirianni stuff has to stop. He honestly comes off in his communication skills, in some of his decision-making, as kind of a moron. I watched his post-game locker room speech. It seemed like there are a lot of rolling eyes in there. So that's the issue with Philly. You know, that's a Howie Roseman, Jeffrey Lurie. Do we have a leader here? Or do we have a bit of a wingnut who is not the brightest bulb on the bush by a long shot? Because they have players, and when they're healthy, when they get A.J. Brown back, they can do some damage in the NFC this year. I think they can, with Barkley in particular, because he's been spectacular in three games. Okay? He's got 351 yards rushing, four touchdowns, averaging 5.6 yards per carry in three games. He's got another 10 catches for a touchdown. He has been... Did you see him run away on that touchdown run, the speed? Wow.
He's still got it.
Normally
at this time, that speed starts to go a little bit. He's still got it.
If he can stay healthy, that's been the big issue with him. Look out. But again, the Sirianni factor, I don't know what's going on there. Like, do they think he's a dum-dum? I think the players might think he's a dum-dum.
Jalen Hurts definitely thinks he's a dum-dum. We know that for certain because of that article that came out this summer, and I don't think that's changed.
Yeah. Now, is he leaving Kellen Moore alone? The idea, like, I'd love to see the analytics 4th-and-1 with one timeout at the opponent's 15-yard line. When you know that play is going to end with about 9 seconds to go, 8 seconds to go, which means you're going to have one shot to the end zone. You have to kick the field goal there. You have to. You got to kick the field goal there. The 4th-and-3 at the New Orleans 35-yard line on their opening drive of the second half, to me, that's more debatable. I mean, 4th-and-3 analytically at the other team's 34, 3-0 game. You know, I'm guaranteeing that there's an advantage analytically based on the history of 4th-and-3 in that spot of the field, that it's probably a lean to go for it. I wouldn't have mind if they'd kicked the field goal because it's like, God, if we get stopped again, we're going to still be stuck on zero. There's like a psychological effect to that. But the one at the end of the first half made no sense. No sense. And then he tried a 60-yard field goal. Like when they did, when he's allergic to field goals, he doesn't realize they're worth 3 points because he's a dummy. And then they're at the New Orleans 42 in a 7-6 game that they're leading. And he puts Elliott, I know that 60-yard field goals are like the old 50s, okay? But the old 50s were not, you know, slam dunks. And a 60-yard field goal with the way their defense had been playing, to give New Orleans the ball at midfield I'm not suggesting go for it on 4th-and-11. I'm suggesting punting it on 4th-and-11. I know Elliott's a great kicker, and there's some debate there to be had. It's not a total slam dunk. If you make it, you're up 10-6. But if you miss it, they're one first down away from field goal range themselves. So they scored a touchdown on that drive. That was the play in which he hit Olave on the big play on second and 10, that deep in. God, Olave gets open, doesn't he? Whew. All right, let's go to Cleveland for the other NFC East game yesterday.
Jones in a shotgun set. Singletary to his right. Jones back to throw, looks, fires one, left corner of the end zone. Neighbors makes a diving catch, but did he get his feet in? No signal yet. Yes, touchdown! In the back left corner of the end zone.
Malik Neighbors, through 3 weeks of his rookie campaign, has 23 receptions for 271 yards and 3 touchdowns. He's the first player in NFL history with at least 20 receptions and 3 touchdowns in his first three career games. We said it last week. He was the best player on the field last week. In week two of his career, he's such a brilliant route runner. And, you know, you don't notice that as much at the college level when it just seems like everybody's wide open. But he is making Daniel Jones look a lot better than most of you thought Daniel Jones could look. Jones against a first-rate defense, not what they had last week. 24-34, 236 yards, 2 touchdowns, and no turnovers in the game. Neighbors ended up with 8 for 78, 2 touchdowns on 12 targets, so he didn't get the 18 targets he got last week. And Cleveland ended up with 2 fumbles. Deshaun Watson fumbled twice in the game, and the Browns lose 21-15. The Giants were really in control of this game until late because it was 21-7. Cleveland couldn't do anything. Then Cleveland scored and went for the 2. You know, that analytics, down 14, you score, you go for 2 there. But they fumbled. They got stopped on downs. They had three other opportunities with the ball, and they couldn't get it done. And the Giants end up getting out of there with a 21-15 win. The Giants easily, right with a kicker last week, could be 2-1 on the season. Another good day for Devin Singletary, who continues to be a really good, versatile back for them. He had 16 carries, 65 yards. That's over 4 yards a carry. And he had 4 catches for 43 yards in the game as well. The Giants host the Cowboys on Thursday night. What's that number, Denton? I haven't looked at it. I'm going to guess Dallas -4.
Let's pull it up here. By the way, Malik Neighbors is so good, he's going to keep Daniel Jones as quarterback in the Giants. He's going to save that man's job.
I know I've been one of those that has never really smashed Daniel Jones because I think that, you know, what he did in 2022 is what he's capable of. He's never had a receiver, not once in his career. And by the way, always had the worst offensive line.
What did you guess that line was?
I guess Dallas -4.
4.5. So you're basically right there. Yeah.
Okay. Tricky, tricky game. These Thursday night games always are. And the Giants are physical defensively. They are. They're pretty good defensively. All right, what do we have next? We've got, how about last night's game? Controversial at the end, KC in Atlanta.
for those kind of zone routes as well.
Mahomes retreats across. It's Juju Smith-Schuster. Touchdown, Kansas City.
Really good football game, tough football game last night, physical game. Atlanta lost two offensive linemen during the game, including their center, which was huge in the game. What they did on Monday night against Philly, they couldn't do last night. They couldn't run the football last night, and that made them one-dimensional. And Chris Jones really got after Kirk. Mahomes, two touchdowns, 217 yards, also threw another interception to Justin Simmons, who has six career interceptions against Patrick Mahomes, the first five as a Denver Bronco. But really, this game came down to Atlanta having two long drives at the end of the game, down 22-17. The first one ended with a pass to Kyle Pitts on third and five at the KC6, in which he is grabbed and bear hugged before the ball got there, and there was no flag. He was also held off the line of scrimmage, and then they went for it with 4:08 to go, fourth and five at the KC6, down 22-17. That's a coin flip to me. I think let me just say this. When you got the Falcons plus three, I wanted the field goal there for 22-20. And then if you get the ball back, great. If you don't, you know, the final score is 22-20. They went for it, and Drake London got held, and there was no call on back-to-backs. They turned it over on downs, but they got it back again, and they got down to the KC 13-yard line and had third and one. And Tyler Algier got stopped. And then on fourth and one, I'll tell you what, he's a great player. Nick Bolton makes the play of the game. He's in the backfield stopping Bijan Robinson for a one-yard loss on fourth and one. And KC gets out of Dodge with their third straight game that basically ends at the very end of the game, 22-17. Really good football game. I think Atlanta's a good team, Denton. I think they're going to be there when we get to November and December with enough wins to potentially contend in that NFC South. But to start the season with Pittsburgh, Philly, and Kansas City, and oh, by the way, the next 2 weeks are Saints, Buccaneers. It's rough. This is where you say about a team, you don't need to be good now. You need to have enough wins so that if you become good later, those games matter. They're one of those teams. There are many teams that are like that. But you got to weather the storm of what's turned into a brutal schedule. You've had a chance to win all three games, and you're 1-2. Meantime, the Chiefs could have lost all three of their games. But you know why they don't? Because they've got Pat Mahomes, Chris Jones, Steve Spagnuolo, and Andy Reid. Championship caliber leadership. And it comes through in these games. They play the Chargers, by the way, coming up late Sunday, and the Chargers have quarterback problems. We'll finish going around the NFL with some of the other games from yesterday, including some of the stunners. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Jared working out of the gun. Takes the snap, he's back. Four-man rush. Goff sets, throws, got Amon-Ra. Flips it on the hook and ladder. Coming inside the five. Wow. To the end zone. Yes. Jahmyr Gibbs.
Yes.
Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Oh, baby, how beautiful is that?
Dan Miller on the call. Dan Miller, one of the very early WTEMers. Doc and Dan, one of the best shows ever on this station, with the call as the Lions went out to Arizona, Washington's next opponent, and beat the Cardinals 20-13. I think the most impressive thing for Detroit yesterday, it's kind of the model you want to see tonight, is their offense kept Kyler Murray and company off the field. They dominated time of possession. They ran 15 more offensive snaps in the game, in part because they converted on third down and they got stops on Arizona on third down. Arizona was 1-for-9 in this one, 20-13. How about the season that David Montgomery is off to? He had that overtime, run the ball right down the field against the Rams in the opener. He went for a 105 yesterday. He's got 231 yards in three games. He's caught the ball a little bit here or there. You know, they've got that situation in the backfield with him and Gibbs. It's a really good 1-2 combination. But don't you feel like they kind of are leaning more on Montgomery than Gibbs?
I think you're right on that offensively. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I mean, Goff, another, you know, high percentage day. He didn't need to do much. Detroit needed that win after losing to Tampa last week at home. They get a big game on Monday Night Football 1 week from tonight against the undefeated Seahawks. Arizona falls to 1-2. They get their third straight home game to start the season. They lost to the Bills in the opener on the road, but they played the Rams last week at home, the Lions yesterday at home, and they get Washington coming in at home on Sunday. Let's go to Vegas. No, let's go to Minnesota, excuse me, for the 3-0 Vikings against the Texans.
Now back to the left. Arnold takes the snap. Four-man rush. Looking left. Sam. He'll scamper out to the left. Eyes into the end zone. Throws. Touchdown! Darnold to Justin Jefferson. And the Minnesota Vikings take the interception and turn it into six.
I mean, the Vikings are turning people over at a ridiculous rate here early in the season. They made C.J. Stroud look pedestrian. They've completely dominated all three of their opponents defensively. And Sam Darnold is in the right offense, as we talked about week one. And he is having an exceptional season. Four touchdowns yesterday, no interceptions on the day. 17 of 28 for a 181. He did injure his knee late. I don't think it's anything serious, but a couple of things on the Minnesota Vikings right now. They have, in their first three games, they've got 16 sacks. All right, they had 5 in week 1, 6 in week 2, 5 in week 3. They became the third team since 1990 with at least 5 sacks in each of their first 3 games of the season, joining the 2001 Saints and the 2000 Buccaneers. Brian Flores is doing a phenomenal job. Let me point something out, because this is going to be, and this has been, my criticism of you-know-who over the years. The one thing I've said over and over again is when you pay elite dollars to a quarterback who's not elite, who is just very good, it can be a problem because you're not good in the other areas to support. They've had terrible defense with Kirk there. With the money that they didn't pay Kirk, they went out and got Jonathan Greenard. They went out and got Andrew Van Ginkle. They went out and got another dude, Shaq Griffin, on defense. They are right now lights out, and their scheme with Brian Flores, people are scratching their heads at each week. They can't figure this dude out. And right now, I'm pulling it up right now, the turnover margin in the first three games. Let's see if they have that up yet through three games. Yeah, Minnesota's got 6 takeaways. They're plus 2 overall because Darnold does have a couple of picks and a fumble. But they have been dominant defensively. By the way, you want to hear something, of course, interesting, right? It always turns out this way. Plus minus matters. Green Bay's plus 7 in 3 games, they're 2-1. The Saints are plus 4, they're 2-1. The Steelers are plus 4, they're 3-0. The Bills are plus 3, they're undefeated. The Chargers are plus 3, they're 2-1. The Vikings are plus 2, they're undefeated. Then you get to the plus ones, which, you know, through 3 games, whatever. Baltimore, Rams, Patriots, Jets, but the top 6 teams in the league in turnover margin through the first 3 games, all with winning records. All right, let's go to Pittsburgh for another phenomenal defensive football team.
Pass, throws over the middle of the field. It's Calvin Austin. He has a step. Austin heading straight up the middle of the field. Inside the 10, to the 5, touchdown. Calvin Austin, 55 yards from Fields to Austin.
The Chargers in this game had minus 5 yards in the second half. sorry to say this, Sabah, but Taylor Heinicke was a part of that. They pulled Justin Herbert, who banged up his ankle again, and Taylor was sacked three times on six snaps and went backwards. And that's the problem right now. Everybody's going backwards against Pittsburgh. Their defense in the first three games, like Minnesota's, has been dominant. Dominant. Here's something on the Steelers. The Steelers allowed 10 points in week one, 6 in week two, 10 in week three. Fifth team since 2000 to win each of their first three games and allow 10 or fewer points. The other teams included the, I'm trying to see if it included a Super Bowl team. It did not. None of the other teams were Super Bowl teams. So there is that. Pittsburgh 3-0 for the first time since 2020. Another decent day for Justin Fields. All right, we'll get back to the rest of the NFL. Talk about the Broncos' ridiculous upset win against the Bucks. The 49ers come back against the Rams, and Malik Willis's day. We'll do that a little bit later on in the upcoming hour, but Ben Standing will join us next from Cincinnati.